Welcome back to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. We're going to try this one more time. Hopefully, we're able to get the equipment to work with our next guest. And if we do, then that shows one thing, that they people do not want Senator Gravel to talk about the National Democratic Initiative, which is extremely important because there's a local party, the BC Federation Party, is trying to do that here in British Columbia. They're trying to regain the power back in the hands of the people and take it from the elite. That way, what happened in Ontario will never again have a chance to happen anywhere in Canada. With that said, hopefully our next guest is on the line right now. He's a leader of the National Nonprofit Party and an advocate for a peaceful change for here in Canada, where the power and the resources are put back in the hands of the Canadian people only. With that said, Lynn, are you there? Hello, Lynn? Okay, we seem to be having problems here, and hopefully we're... Hello, Lynn? Well, the only thing we can really do is just probably take another PA break, and hopefully we can work this out.
A critical mass. It was a Sunday edition, so that was difficult. Critical mass is usually held in every city in North America last Friday of the month. It was on a Sunday, so it was a special critical mass. I didn't think anything of it. I wasn't there. I was not there to protest. I was there to ride my bike through the city of Toronto, which I thought was legal. It was not, apparently. I was charged under inciting. An officer took me off my bike. He was riding on the sidewalk. He punched me in the face and the teeth. I went down hard. The police threw me on their bicycle. I have scratch marks all over me from their bicycle. They pushed me down. 3-4 of them were on top of me. I really couldn't see. They didn't charge me anything right there. I told them I'm not resisting. Please, I'm not resisting. They attacked me in my privates. They knocked my head against the ground repeatedly. They wouldn't take mercy into their system. It was very scary, and I've lived with these cops all my life, and I've never, well, I've seen them do this before, and actually, I've seen them do this to many people this weekend. I didn't realize they'd take it out on me in Yorkville. This was on Yorkville Avenue. It was a full street full of people shopping, going about their business, trying to return to a life as normal. The police took that from them. The police threatened every single witness with obstruction of justice charges because they were watching them beat me. They tried to hide them beating me by taking me into a parking structure. They told me, take him to a corner without any cameras. They threatened me with more beatings if I didn't keep quiet. They threatened me with more charges if I didn't keep quiet. And they beat me more, regardless of that. They handcuffed me more than usual. Tighter than usual. Their sergeant came around. He took mercy on me. He told them, quit it, get the handcuffs loose, get him in the paddy wagon, get him down to the detention center. They charged me for inciting. I don't know what I was inciting. They never told me. They said I was a no-good anarchist. I'm a card-carrying NDPer. I vote NDP. I'm left, you know, as good as you can. I don't know what anarchy means, really. They took me down to the detention center. They took my shoes away. They kept me in these plastic handcuffs for 12 hours. They threw me in a cell that was overcrowded with 25 people. I read in the Globe and Mail the day before that these cells were only supposed to be for 10 people. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what was going on. I was bleeding. My face, my nose, my arm was splintered. I was asking for emergency medical service. Nobody received emergency medical service in the entire facility. Nobody received phone calls. I got a little small styrofoam cup of water every 5 hours. So I only got two little small cups of water. We asked them for mercy. We asked them for our rights as humans. They laughed at us. They ate chocolate-covered strawberries in front of us. They ate apples. They drank huge bottles of water, and they threw us apple cores. Some people were so desperate to eat, they ate their apple cores. they let me go under a verbal contract that I would not go to a protest ever again. These aren't rights. These are threats. This intimidation, I am now afraid that they will take me back there. It's always now forever in my head. And I will work very hard to never let this ever happen again in my home city. Because it's my home. It's not their home. They're, like, taking the city and changing it into something else that I did not grow up in.
Well, that right there was YouTube with a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey B. He was riding a bike down in Toronto, and he was attacked by the police. And I have Kevin Annette here right now, and we're going to have Lynn calling in. Kevin, I wanted to basically say this Public Work Protection Act apparently passed in 1939. It was revised again in 1990. So I think Mike Harris was in power in 1990, and we all remember what happened in 1995 when the Anthony Dudley George was gunned down.
From a kill order after, there were three cops who were going to testify, two cops, yeah. That Mike Harris gave the kill order to kill Dudley yeah. George, and they both died in car accidents on yeah. the highway.
Well, this Public Works Protection Act, what happened was it was revised again in 1990. And I was watching a YouTube, and there was a constitutional lawyer talking. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is that the lieutenant governor has the power with the people that are in cabinet within the Ontario government, right? They basically have the power to pass whatever law they want. Lieutenant governor rubber stamps it.
Well, that's the norm in Canada, because we have most of the legislation is passed order in council, yeah. not in House of Commons.
Well, also,
these laws also never go off the books. They're always on yeah. the books.
What they've done is they've expanded the Public Works Protection Act. Originally was for just protecting court systems and also jail places. Mm-hmm. So what happened was they've expanded it to say that Lieutenant Governor and the Ontario Cabinet can decide wherever the Public Works is, wherever they want to go. And what happened also at the same time, this constitutional lawyer continued on, and he was talking, and he was saying that even though this is on the books, it was never been tried in a court of law to see if it actually can stand up against the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Because what they'll do is they'll put this in place, they'll quickly enact the police powers, pull the people off the street, and then all of a sudden, right after these events are over, oh, all of a sudden they drop all these charges, so it doesn't go to court.
Right.
So.
Well, oh, somebody's on the line here, it looks like. Okay.
Are you there, Lynn?
Yes, I am.
So you were actually there with a protest of 10,000 to 20,000 people. Could you tell our listening audience a little bit about that and how the police car that was set on fire, how you noticed that there was two people that were wearing the Black Bloc outfit actually had police shoe wear attire on?
Yes, okay. It was a parade. Every group imaginable, the reflection of Canadian society, everything, there was children, there was union people, grandmothers with signs saying, you know, save our pensions. As we got close, and there was a pre-approved parade route set up by the Canadian Federation of Labor, as we got the intersection of Spinetta and Queen, at that intersection, there was a single police car set in the middle of the intersection. Opposite that was the media towers and up on balconies, the national media, good view of this bait car, and it was a bait car. At that intersection, it was just a parade. At that intersection, riot police, one row of riot police, stopped the parade. People in front were singing, "Oh Canada." And then they charged the crowd. And in a panic, and maybe 1,000 people went running backwards. The riot police blended to each side, and there was now there's double rows of riot police at this intersection. The crowd charges forward. Now, in amongst a group of anti-globalization protesters, they're always dressed in black. That's their insignia. Where I saw two men that had mingled with that group. It's quite a large number of people. And what made them stand out is that they had police issue, RCMP issue, police boots. the same as I saw in Montebello 2 years ago. And these two fellows, though it could have been more, I saw two, these fellows led the charge towards the police car and started the riot. They were, how can I say it? The riot police triggered and enraged the people. And then they fell back, and these two fellows led the charge. And, of course, other people followed like a hockey riot. They were enraged at this. And the riot police at this intersection, there must have been a couple hundred, they stood there, they did nothing, giving a nice view for the national media to justify this $1.3 billion they spent on this conference. It was a setup, and unfortunately the people fell for it, and they were led. That's what I saw. I was there, me and other members of the National Nonprofit Party, it was just outrageous.
And could you tell our listening audience a little bit about your party that you're the leader of, how you propose change to help the Canadian, ordinary Canadian people?
Well, our party, the strength of the National Nonprofit Party is its integrated systems that actually solve the problems, economic, social, environmental, quickly. And that is our strength. And we have a whole list covering every aspect of Canadian society. The problem with systems of government, they have become obsolete. And some have been obsolete for 100 years, and it is changing the systems that improve the day-to-day lives. And this can be done quickly. Most of the time it takes one piece of paper. Democracy, elections in this country, they should be, and as part of our platform, to make all elections, everyone who wants to present themselves as a candidate gets the same amount of free media time on the national network and an allowance for print that they use in any way they want. And during the election period, only people who are candidates can do their advertising. No commercial advertisements during the election campaign. But remove the $1,000 registration fee from Elections Canada and let the people choose truly democratically who they want to represent. There may be 50 candidates in a riding. Doesn't matter. The people will decide who represents them best. It is fair. It's not just a system like we have now that's set up for only the extremely wealthy or the large parties that are backed by big corporations. Any individual can present them as a candidate for the people. Systems like this. We have systems that improve the day-to-day lives that cost nothing. Converting the country to a metric week. You have 4 days, 40 weekends, 6 week paid vacation, and you work 6 days. And at the end of the year, you work the same number of hours per year, but gives people more living time. It costs nothing to do. Yet it saves 20-25% on air pollution in the cities. Approaches and solutions. Anyways, I'm long-winded, sorry.
Well, what happens is I also have Kevin Annette sitting here, and Kevin Annette and myself, we're big advocates of the Republic of Canada. We want to see the final severing of the ties from the British Empire in the way that the Queen still controls us to this day. We're seeing the Governor General, we're seeing the Lieutenant Governors that have power over the provinces, even the Governor General. When he broke the Parliament, the Governor General was behind helping that one happen. And when the NDP, the Liberals, and the Bloc tried to get together to overthrow the Conservatives, what the Governor General stepped in and stopped that one from happening. So what we're seeing the British Empire is still in control of Canada at this time. One last point is, here in British Columbia, there's a constitution in place here, and what it does is it basically it states that what happens is it states that basically the lieutenant governor is at the top, right? And then you have the premier right below it. So any law that's passed by the government of the day within here in the province of British Columbia The lieutenant governor has to rubber stamp it. What Kevin Annette and myself have proposed, and hopefully many other people have proposed, is that we finally put the power back in the hands of the Canadian people. We have direct democracy initiatives. We have grassroots, basically, ideas rising up from the people that are put out to the people, and we no longer have the ties to the Queen. We have our own leader, we have a president, and we have the Canadian version of that. Our resources are put in our hands, and the power is put back in the hands. And Kevin wants to quickly jump in.
And the Globe and Mail did a survey last week, and it said 4 out of 5 Canadians, after the end of this queen, Elizabeth Windsor, when she's done, they want the end to the monarchy, and they want a republic. So we have 80% of the people in Canada behind that idea.
So what's your thoughts there, Lynn?
Well, all these systems, the governor general, the lieutenant governors, the Senate, these are carry-ons from the British colonial system. And they have been obsolete for many decades. They cost the Canadian taxpayers a fortune. And it is, a lot of these jobs are patronage jobs. They're loaded with political appointees to maintain the old party's control over the nation. These absolutely have to be abolished. They're a burden, and they are a serious infringement on democracy. These are all some of the systems my party and it's in our platform that we want to abolish. It is absurd. The Governor General in last year cost the Canadian taxpayers over close to $115 million just to fly around and wave our hand. This is absurd.
Yeah.
When we have people living on the streets, homeless, hungry, this is an insult to every decent citizen.
Well, let's work together. I mean, it sounds like we're of the same mind
absolutely.
On this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I put out a thing this week. We're calling on all political parties, groups, for us to work together to make a united front for the betterment of the people. And there's many, many groups there that we all want the same thing. We work together. We can achieve this. We may not agree on every small detail, but it is the overall principles that are most important to save this land.
Yep. Well, how does anyone get a hold of you? Do you guys have a website or an email or something?
Our website is nnpp.ca, National Nonprofit Party.
Got it.
And we have 4 different emails, whether it's a general inquiries or candidates, organizers, planners, and they're all nnpp.ca, and the next 3 are nnpp.ca, 1, 2, or 3, depending on a person's focus or interest.
And what happens is, at that G20 over in Toronto, you had a hotel booked, right? And you sound like a party that believes in the Canadian people. You want to change it for the Canadian people. So can you tell us what happened to your party? Just basically, you're offering peaceful changes. Just talk about how the government, the police stopped you from having that conference.
We had put out weeks in advance a call for the name of our meeting was a meeting of minds to organize political parties and groups to form a new government, socially conscious government, and it was a preliminary meeting to discuss the organization. We're booked. We had put this out weeks in advance, all over the web, and to send hundreds of messages. In the morning of our meeting, it was supposed to be the 26th, the head of security at the hotel, nice man, was extremely nervous, took us outside the lobby out on the sidewalk to talk. And the poor man was shaking. And he said, We had 2 of the ICE, Integrated Police Force, officers came and told him, you are not allowed to let them have a meeting in this hotel or let them film anything in this hotel. If you do, we will close down the hotel and empty it. This is a 22-story summer hotel, student residence.
I guess they forgot about the idea that Canada's supposed to be a democratic state.
Well, we know that.
The poor man was nervous, and he said very quietly, well, the two of them are standing there. They're up the street about 50 feet watching us. He said, those two up there, they've been watching you and watching us all day.
So they're acting like they're Stasi, like East German police, secret police.
Absolutely. This is... There's conservative governments throughout history and around the world have a great tendency to oppress the people for power and control. It doesn't matter what country, what political system, it is that conservative mentality. Socially democratic countries do not oppress the people. And unfortunately, we're moving towards a police state. I mean, we're having a meeting of minds. When you cannot sit together in a group and discuss political changes, this is, you know, we expect this of maybe Iran, or we expect this of, a Stalin's era in the Soviet Union. But we do not expect this, and the people of Canada will not tolerate this. It has enraged the population, understandably.
We also have to remember Canadian history at the same time. Like, we have not had a very good history. I think the farmers were protesting back in the 30s. Kevin can probably fill me in more on this. He talked about it in the past. But apparently the Canadian farmers were protesting, and they were met with a couple of farmers, Canadian farmers, were gunned down by the government agents. Here in Canada. At the same time, we have to remember the residential schools where over 50,000 Native American children were killed. We have to remember the Ukrainians forcibly interned from 1914 to 1920, Chinese head tax. We have to remember the Germans being interned in World War II, the Japanese being interned in World War II, the Italians. What happened to the Jewish? There was a boatload of Jewish individuals that were not allowed access to Canada. Mackenzie King was in charge at that time, and he sent them back to Germany, where everyone on that boat was killed in the Holocaust, and the list goes on and on. So, I mean, we were proposing, look, we have to admit what our past is. At the same time, we have to teach the children what the past is, but let's start acting like human beings. Let's start standing up for what we said we're going to stand up for. We have to stand up for human rights, and we have to begin with this nation. This is our nation, the nation that I'm willing to live and die to protect so the children will have a better future. And that's what we really need more than anything else. Kevin, you wanted to quickly jump in and talk a little bit about that 1930s, what happened with the farmers?
Oh, well, I mean, it was so widespread. I mean, when you scratch the surface and look at the real Canadian history, the kind you're never taught in school, I mean, it's just every area of the country, every year is filled with these kinds of stories. So, I mean, you know, we're taught we live in a democracy, but it's a certain kind of democracy where people don't actually have control of their lives, and any group can be targeted and shut down and wiped out. You know, for years until... it's funny, trade unionists now who seem to be kind of part of the system. At one time, you know, it was open season. I knew some guys down here on the waterfront. A guy, Joe Hensby, used to be a longshoreman. He said when they went on strike in 1946, Canadian Seamen's Union, the RCMP came into their strike shed with shotguns and started opening up and killing them. And I mean, that was right down here on Ballantyne Pier. 1946, Joe Hensby said they had to dive into the water because the Mounties was trying to kill all of them. This is RCMP with shotguns, like three blocks from where we're sitting. So, I mean, it's like this is the norm in Canada, and it doesn't surprise me that it's beginning to happen to G20 protesters or to your political party. I mean, it's what we don't, you know, we're kind of waking up to what we're part of here.
Well, Lynn, what happens, I just want you to quickly comment. You spent some time down in South America, too, and you were talking to me on the phone when we had a chance to talk. So what happens is, could you quickly talk about... you know, what you saw down in South America?
It was an unusual situation. I arrived there about 3 years after the military took over Argentina. And there was a lot of, in North America, negative press. But what had happened, the country, the bureaucrats, the politicians had become so corrupt that to save the country from total collapse, the military actually took over the country. They formed a military junta, and they took over the country. They put 5 militaries on every street corner, eliminated street crime, etc. I knew people who you had to pay protection to the local politicians, local police, so their children wouldn't be kidnapped. The military police, once they took over, they got rid of this. It was so bad that the Minister of Finance scooped up all the coins, shipped them to Brazil, turned them, melted them down for the metal, and took the money and went to Switzerland.
What?
After the military took over, life started to come back to normal. People, shops could be open. They wouldn't be afraid of being robbed. The people went back to a living. But the previous political system was so corrupt, so controlled by large businesses and corporations, that it turned the country collapsed.
Do you see that happening in Canada right now? Exact same thing that you saw in Argentina?
We're not at that point yet, but our political process, our government agencies are controlled by those who have great wealth and power. The corporations and the banks, there's an old expression, democracy is the best government that money can buy. And unfortunately, money has bought all the big parties. Part of the national nonprofit system is in every department and locally, provincially, federally, citizens oversight groups, committees, chosen at random, not the blue panel of selected friends, but chosen by lottery of citizens concerned about the police actions, whatever, medical care, doesn't matter what department, that they oversee, they examine, and they have the power to investigate, fire people, whatever. Put the day-to-day oversight into the hands of the citizens, not just because, well, a few big corporations, donate greatly to politicians. We have a scandal that's coming out, which is outrageous. Lockheed Martin, the largest, one of the largest weapons manufacturer in the world, 2 years ago took over the Canadian Museum of Humanity, rented the whole bottom floor. Now, we have found out, they have been awarded a $16 billion contract, and with service and parts and all this, it's going to come up to $32 billion. The contract was never put out for public tendering, and they just gave it to Lockheed Martin. And if that is not, someone is not getting greased, I would be very surprised.
Well, we're seeing the exact same thing here in BC, you know, with our natural resources. What's happening is that I've always said this, and I'll say it again, every single political party that's been in power for the last 40 to 50 years here in the province of British Columbia have ran this province to the ground. Every single party, and the only party that's actually shown any bit of honesty in them, it's been the social credit. And what happens is the social credit were kicked out of office because of political, oh, here's a paper bag full of money, and so they're kicked out of office for political indiscretions, you could say. And so what's happening is our natural resources are being loaded on the back of these barges, gigantic rocks, riprap, that, oh, there's no resources in there, because as a Canada Customs says, shipped down to the United States where it's processed, the gold, the copper, the silver, it's being taken out of it. We're talking hundreds of billions of dollars have been taken from this province. The people of BC, we have the poorest postal code in Canada. We're sitting in right now. Here in East Hastings, where this radio station is broadcasting out of, is the poorest postal code in Canada. We have the highest rate of single parents that living in poverty are living in this province. You know, the elite in this province have taken and taken and taken from us. This harmonization tax is nothing more than another attempt to further break the people of British Columbia. And as someone who lives here in BC, was born here in BC, and as a Canadian, I say to you, elite, what happens is the Republic of Canada is coming. And when it does come, we'll make sure that what happens is we're going to make sure that everyone that's broken the law and attempted to break the people, you will be held accountable in the court of law for your actions against the people, all the crimes you committed, especially the TO police officers that did the crimes against the people. Your day in court will come, and you will be held accountable. And all the police that, you know, that you didn't do anything, you're not guilty of any crimes. You know, I say to you, you know, it's great to see honest police officers. And we just need to start clearing out some of that dead weight that are very corrupt.
Well, we need our own courts. You know, the court system now is not only corrupt, but they're all like politicians. They all take an oath of loyalty to the crown. You know, a foreign monarch with false jurisdiction over this country. So we need to set up our own courts. And we have that model from history where, you know, in Ireland, in our country, where the people there, the way they fought the British Empire is they set up their own parliament, their own courts within the country alongside, and said to people, start using the system now. Forget about the British. And that's what happened. So, I mean, we got it. Like, I think our brother there, Lynn, is it your name, Lynn?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're talking along the same lines, direct action to create the new society, not waiting for the old system to do it.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What we did, what I did when I designed the system, I spent a year and a half designing this system. I'm a builder, and I'm a problem solver. And I started with this one premise. The needs of the many outweigh the greed of a few.
Absolutely.
And I started looking at every system, how government operates, and what it takes to make it, change it quickly, efficiently, and logically that benefits the people, not the 1% that control the economy of this country. And in BC, you're absolutely right. They are raping this country, and they're doing it in every province. Different items, different places. The same. It is the same thing going across this nation. They have bankrupt this country. They have deindustrialized this nation. And it is close to criminal. It is, in many cases, it is criminal. But the people of this land are decent, hardworking people. That's all they have to do is say, we will not tolerate this behavior anymore. And we have to be able to give them a viable option where they can look at it and say, yes, this will solve my problem. Abolish sales taxes and hidden taxes on everything produced in the country. This will save me money. For small businesses, make unit pricing. So when a small business goes to a manufacturer or a wholesaler, he buys it at the same price as the big corporations like Walmart or any other big corporation. Unit pricing. It doesn't cost anything to do, but make the system fair. And Canadians are a fair people. And we just have to put in systems that make it fair again and eliminate all this patronage which has corrupted the nation. I'm sorry. And I get going and, you know.
Well, actually,
Don't apologize. You
have some very good points there, and we're really enjoying what you're saying. But you also have to remember, if you take a lesson from history, we take a look over at that. I always keep quoting over in Prussia, Frederick the Great, because here is a gentleman. He had a small country. He's right next to Poland's to his south. Russia's over to its east. Germany's over to the west. And he was able to keep his country going because what he did was he said anything that can be produced in his nation, he would not allow into his nation to undercut what is already being produced there. Thus, he did not allow his nation to become an economical dumping ground. Here in Canada, what we've done is we've allowed our guts to be ripped right out of us. We've allowed our infrastructure to be ripped out of us, as you were saying there, Lynn. And we've also allowed even the power system is basically subpar. You know, we're providing, over in Quebec, is providing power to the eastern seaboard, the United States. So what we're looking at, I look at Canada as nothing more than, you know, it's just basically providing so that the American Empire can keep going. But I'm just saying to the American Empire, look, you should have no control over Canada. You know, we have nothing against the American people. Some of my greatest friends are American, right? But we're just basically saying to the empires, look, the country should belong to the people. The country of Canada belongs to Canadians. The country of the United States belongs to Americans. And we say to the British Empire, don't let your rear end hit the door as we're slamming it and kicking you out of the North American continent.
So that it is obsolete. Colonialism has been 100 years. It is, whether it's economic colonialism or military colonialism, we, the government of Canada, no, it's a conservative, liberal government that are both the same, it doesn't matter. We are being a colonial power in Afghanistan for an oil and gas pipeline and for the mineral resources of to make corporations, mining corporations, and oil corporations rich. Canadian soldiers, these wonderful people, they are fighting and dying so some corporation can have a better fourth quarter. This is the most criminal thing on the planet. Afghan citizens, the government and the media demonize them. Oh, they're Taliban, or the terrorists, or this. They never call them citizens of Afghanistan. You know, just for money, mm-hmm. You do not do this. Human decency dictates we do not do this to citizens here. We do not do this to citizens anywhere in the world. This is morally wrong by all standards of every society. But we have a government that, well, you follow the money, you find the answers. Yeah. I'm sorry, I just...
We only have maybe another 2 minutes, so okay. What happens is, if you could share some last minutes... Actually, Lynn, if you could share some last-minute contact information, just basically about 30 seconds, and I'm going to have Kevin share some last minutes, and then we're going to go to the song. It's basically, that one's called Too Late for an Apology. This goes out to all you British supporters of the British Empire. We're going to basically, we wanted to declare the independence of Canada with that song. So I'll just let you just basically, is it some last thoughts you have there, Lynn?
And okay, contact the last information. Thought is I want everyone to look at our website, nnpp.ca. If you like what you see, tell your friends. That's all. We don't want your money. It's your money. You should keep it. That's it.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn. You had 30 seconds there, Kevin.
Just a quote from the Declaration of Arbroath, where my people in Scotland declared independence from England in 1320, and it said, "It is not for riches, nor glory, nor honor that we fight, but for freedom, for that alone, which no honest man lays down but with life itself."
That's so true, Kevin. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to Monday Brown Bagger, and we're going to leave you with a song. This is a little message to the Queen and all of her little puppets that she's controlling. Just pay attention to the song as we declare the independence for Canada and call for the Republic of Canada. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. Until we meet again, have a great day.
It's too late to apologize. stay.